Welcome to this Ufula audio production of The Lone Ranger Rides by Fran Stryker. Volume 3, Chapter 7, Yuma. It was mid-afternoon before Penelope returned to the clearing in the woods. She had found some difficulty in slipping unobserved into the storeroom on the ranch to secure the things that now reposed in saddlebags. While in the basin, the girl had made sure that Mort Cavendish would be occupied with the supervision of branding a lot of new cattle. He could hardly get back home before dark. This would give Penny ample time to make her call on Becky and be with her when Mort came in. When Penny turned the supplies over to Tonto, she saw the gratitude in the Indian's eyes.
"It was almost as if the food were going to save his life," she thought later.
The truth of the matter was that the food was to save a life that was more important to the Indian than his own could possibly be. While in the clearing, Penny tried to learn more about the trail, but Tonto either would not or could not inform her regarding its origin. She tried again to make friends with the horse called Silver, but her overtures were rejected. Silver remained aloof. Las Vegas stood by, and Penny had the impression that he was laughing at her rebuff by Silver in whatever way a Mustang had of laughing. It irked her.
"I'll come back," she said to Silver, "and bring you some sugar and oats, and that'll make you beg to be friends."
She mounted Las Vegas and rode away, little realizing the grim sequence of events that was to be started simply because she decided to take sugar to a stallion, or the appalling episode that portended in the basin. Penny reached the basin and rode directly to the ranch house. As she rounded the corner and came into view of the porch, she saw, first of all, big stockinged feet resting on the railing, then long legs, and then the sleepy-looking face of Cousin Jeb. Jeb was looked upon by everyone as worthless. Details of work about the ranch were mysteries that he had never tried to fathom, and he helped best by keeping out of everyone's way. While Penny had no respect for Jeb, she disliked him far less than she did her other cousins, Jeb's three brothers. She had thought several times that Jeb was not nearly so simple as he was thought to be. He had a lot of idle time, and he spent it all in thinking. Sometimes the results of his periods of concentration were surprisingly astute. The girl dismounted near the steps and slapped Las Vegas in the proper place.
"Get going," she said.
Her respect for the Mustang lessened after seeing the silver stallion. Las Vegas scampered toward the corral while Penny mounted the porch and perched on the railing.
"What's new, Jeb?"
she greeted her cousin. Jeb looked at the girl with eyes that were watery and weak.
"Nothing much, I guess," he replied without breaking the rhythm of his long-jawed chewing of a match. He stared off at the distant gap.
"Got some thinking to do before I come to any conclusions. So far, I'd say they ain't nothing much that's new."
He let his tilted-back chair drop to its normal four-legged position. He slipped his feet into heavy lace-up shoes that had no laces and pushed himself by the arms of the chair to his feet. Standing erect, Jeb Cavendish would have been uncommonly tall. Even in his slouching posture, he was well over 6'2". His growing all went one way, he explained from time to time, and it was true. He had the same poundage that would have made a normal man of 5'8". Jeb was lean.
"Lot of thinking to get done," he repeated musingly, as he pushed his tapering hands deep into the pockets of faded dungarees that ended halfway between his knees and shoe tops. Penny waited, knowing that Jeb would have more to say if given sufficient time. Jeb spat through teeth that were large and horsey. Then he took off a battered hat that was ventilated with several holes and scratched the naked part of his head that was constantly widening with the ebbing of his thin, sandy-colored hair.
"You know, Penelope," he said at length, "it's written in Scripture that the Lord tempers the wind to the shorn lamb."
So Jeb was in one of his Scripture-quoting moods.
"What about it?"
asked Penny.
"I've heard of that, and I've always thought that if the lamb hadn't been shorn, the wind wouldn't have had to be tempered."
Jeb looked at the girl reprovingly and went on.
Maybe reasoning along the same lines is the Lord's will to blind Uncle Bryant so he can't see what goes on around here.
What do you mean by that?
Asked Penny quickly.
Meaning it'd save Bryant an awful powerful lot of mental suffering and bloody sweat if he didn't see it too much. Gorsh.
Penny rose and faced her cousin directly.
Jeb, is it true that Uncle Bryant's eyes are going back on him?
Don't know.
But you think they are.
Bryant's never complained about his sight.
Why do you think he's losing it?
Jeb answered with another question.
Have you seen him reading of late?
Penny hadn't, and she said so.
But he never did spend much time reading, so you can't tell anything by that.
You see the God-defined sort of men that come to work here?
Penny nodded.
I don't like their looks at all.
Just so. Neither would Bryant. He's left the hiring of new hands to Mort and Vince. If he'd seen Rangoon and Sawtell and some of the rest, he'd shoot him on general principle in the same way a man step on a pison bad murder spider. Those men have been here. Bryant's had chances to see him and done nothing.
Having delivered himself of this, Jeb resumed his chair and slipped his feet out of the shoes again.
Takes more thinking.
He finished, letting his eyes return to far-off places. Penny gripped her cousin's arm.
Look here, Jeb. I want to know more about things in the basin. Everyone has been so darn quiet and so strained acting that it almost seems as if the place is filled with ghosts or something. What's it all about?
Jeb fixed his pale eyes on the girl. They seemed to cover themselves with a veil. He leaned forward and spoke in a soft, confidential voice.
Course, cousin. T'others around here think I'm touched in the head. None of them listens to me but you. They don't figure me worth listening to. But I ain't sleeping. I see things. I'll think things out. Don't know what it is. Can't put my finger on it, but these ugly happenings in this here basin. There'll be some killing here.
Jeb's voice took on a quality that chilled Penelope more than the rain that had but recently stopped falling. There was something almost sepulchral about the way he spoke. He seemed to be foretelling events with an authority that could not be doubted.
Things can't boil underneath without breaking out soon. Murder is coming, and that won't be all. And I'll tell you some more.
His voice fell to a hoarse whisper.
Uncle Bryant is getting ready to die.
Penelope broke in.
But that's...
Jeb stopped the girl.
It's true. Don't ask for no more. Gorsh, Bryant is making ready. I know it. He's making ready to die.
Penny knew that she'd gain nothing by pressing Jeb for further information at this time. She also knew it was time for her to go to Rebecca. She crossed the porch and entered the house to find another cousin sprawling in the living room. The mere fact that Wally was there in his overdressed glory was substantial evidence that Bryant was not around. Bryant hated Wally chiefly for his clothes, secondarily for his indolent love of social life and the girls in the nearest town. Wally was experimenting with a guitar, doubtless practicing some new tune to play in his part of Don Juan. His shirt and the tightly wound neckerchief on his fat neck were of the finest silk and of a brilliant hue. His trousers were of high-priced fawn skin, and his boots, as usual, gleamed like mirrors. He had practiced long to strum the strings of his guitar in the manner that would best bring out the sparkle of the imitation diamond on one of his 10 fat fingers. He wore 2 guns, but wouldn't have had the nerve to use them. The guns were hypocrisy, the ring an imitation. The 2 were symbolic of the man who wore them, an imitation and a hypocrite. Penny walked past without speaking and entered the kitchen where old Gimlet was cooking supper. His one good eye set in a round and wrinkled face was like the current of a hot cross bun. The one eye that gave the man his nickname was sharp and penetrating, but now it lit with pleasure at the sight of the girl.
"Gee raps!" exclaimed Gimlet. "I'm glad to see you back, missy. I sure as hell, pardon the cussin', I sure worry when you ain't around."
Penny smiled. "I just wanted to tell you that I won't be here for supper. I'm going over to Becky's place."
Gimlet frowned.
"If I'd have known that, I'd have taken a lot less trouble in fixing good-eating steaks."
The girl exchanged a few more words with the cook, then left by the rear door. At the corral, which lay between her home and Rebecca's, she saw Yuma working on Las Vegas. Yuma was the only new employee in the basin that Penny could look at without an instinctive feeling of revulsion. Yuma was working a brush vigorously over the hide of the Mustang when Penny approached. She had heard a few rumors about the big, pleasant-faced cowpuncher, with shoulders so big and broad that they seemed to droop of their own weight. It had been said by expert judges of good fighters that a blow from Yuma's fist would drop a bull. He had once been locked in the back room of a saloon with four men in what was supposed to be a fight to the finish. Yuma's finish, supposedly. A short time later, his fists crashed through the panels of a locked door and a mighty demon of a man walked out. His clothing was in shreds. Inside the room, debris and wreckage were everywhere, and four men lay prostrate on the floor.
"You needn't rub the hide off of him,"
said Penny as she came near. Yuma looked up and grew red in the face. Before the pretty girl, the giant was flushed and bashful.
"Sure, ma'am. I'm right sorry. I had a little more time on my hands and seeing your horse. Being as you wasn't around, I figured to clean the horse up some."
"And if I had been around,"
replied the girl in a teasing voice,
"I suppose you'd have cleaned me up."
Yuma stared with mouth open.
"Gosh, Miss Penelope,
He paused, completely at a loss. Penny really enjoyed watching the young giant squirm in his embarrassment. She rested her elbows on a rail of the corral and hooked the heel of one boot on a lower rail. Leaning back, she watched him for a moment and then said,
"What's your real name?"
"Well, folks just sort of call me Yuma. That's where I come from, Yuma."
"But everyone has to have at least two names. Don't you have any other?"
"Most of the gents I've seen around in this here basin lays claim to a couple of names and lies when they does so."
Yuma straightened and looked directly at the girl with his clear blue eyes.
"That remark,"
she said,
"calls for a little expanding. What do you mean?"
"Oh, 'tain't nothing to take offense at," the blond man said slowly. "A lot of gents in this country left their right names east of the Mississippi, but I'd sooner not use any name than to borrow one that might belong to some other gent."
Penny feigned a bit of anger.
"Do you mean to imply that Cavendish isn't our right name?"
"Oh, shucks, ma'am, nothing like that. I reckon you and your relatives has a right to the name. But there ain't many others on this spread that was born with the handle they're using now."
"Go on, Yuma. This is interesting."
Yuma saw Rangoon crossing toward the bunkhouse from the saddle shed.
"There goes a gent that lays claim to the name of Rangoon. Last time I seen him, he called himself Abe Larkin, but he made that name sort of dangerous by using it when he shot up a couple of homesteaders near Snake Flats."
"You mean he's a murderer?"
"That's what the law liked to hang him for being if they knowed where to reach him."
Yuma took a step closer to the girl. His thumb jerked over his shoulder in the general direction of the open grazing land.
"Out there, branding cattle," he said. "There's a couple of hombres that was in the hoss trading business in Mexico. They sold hosses to some soldiers down there. Only trouble was they wasn't particular where the hosses came from. When they got catched taking some hoss flesh from a gent named Turner without paying for the same, well, they shot old Turner."
Penny knew from his manner that Yuma told the truth, but she nevertheless found it hard to believe him.
"What are their names?"
she asked.
"No one knows their real names, but they draw pay here under the names of Lombard and Sawtail. As for me, You can just call me Huma. Penny grew serious.
Very well. I'll call you Huma.
I suppose it's right nervy of me to make mention of this next, but, well...
Perhaps,
interrupted the girl,
if you think it's nervy, you'd better not say it.
Well, I'm a-gonna to just the same. See here, Miss Penelope, I would sure like to feel that if ever you want someone that you can count on to do something, no matter what it is, you'll call on me.
But I hardly know you,
said Penny. Then irrepressibly,
this is so sudden.
Yuma's eyes dropped. Penny could have bitten her tongue. She had turned the sincerity of the man from Arizona aside with banter. She realized instantly that Yuma sensed the danger others had mentioned and wanted her to know where he stood.
I'm right sorry, he apologized. I should have known better than to try to suggest that a no-good saddle tramp like me could be of any good to a lady like you.
Penny laid a brown hand on the solid arm of Yuma. She felt the hard muscles trembling at her touch.
Forgive me, Yuma. I'm sorry. I want you to know that I do appreciate your offer, and that you will be the first one I'll call if I need a friend.
Yuma looked startled.
You mean to say that is, I mean you?
My friends call me Penny.
The girl stuck her right hand out, man-style.
What say, Yuma? Let's be friends.
Yuma hurriedly wiped his right hand on his shirt. He clasped Penny's hand as if it were a delicate thing that might break at a callous touch.
Gosh.
Penny left and ran toward Becky's. Yuma watched the girl, who ran as gracefully as a fawn. He looked in awe at his hand, the hand that had touched the girl's slim fingers. And once more he muttered,
gosh.
He saw Las Vegas eyeing him.
Las Vegas,
he said to the Mustang.
Me and you are downright lucky critters. And the only difference is that you ain't got the brains to know it.
Chapter 8. A Matter of Murder. Tonto the Indian was breaking a trail across Thunder Mountain, where it was said no horse could travel. In a cavern in Bryant's Gap, a Texas Ranger tossed in the torture of fever and infection. In the basin, Penelope Cavendish ran to a house whose door had been chalked by death. Penny was slightly out of breath from running when she opened the door of Becky's home. The place was of one room with a cloth partition at the far end, shutting off the beds from view. Some of the children must have been in bed, for there were only two in sight, both whimpering and sweaty. The room was like an oven, with heat from the stove and the humidity from the recent rain. Mort was scolding the uncomprehending baby in the crib and the sobbing child who sat on the floor. Mort's presence was a surprise. It must have been later than Penny had thought. He swung toward his cousin.
What do you want here?
He demanded.
Becky invited me for dinner,
lied Penny.
I hope to get here in time to help her.
Brushing past Mort, she said,
what can I do, Becky?
The mother of many looked up with tired eyes from the stove.
What's the use? She said.
For dinner!
Mort's voice was loud.
My, but ain't we getting to be the class? Inviting company for dinner.
He snatched a big spoon from a table and thrust it into a stew that was on the stove.
You call that swill dinner? You'd come here and eat the sort of truck she cooks?
Please, be quiet a minute,
said Penny. Becky broke in.
"'Tain't no use lying about it, Penny. Mort ain't no fool. He know you ain't come here to eat. You come thinking he'd whale me again tonight because he catched me in your room this morning. He won't, though. You needn't have fear on that score.'
Mort looked at Becky with a surprise that equaled Penny's. The tired drudge returned his stare.
I mean it,
she said. The whimpering of the young ones ceased as they became absorbed in the adult conversation.
I've been licked by you for the last time. You beat me for hearing things t'other night, but that beating ain't made me forget what I heard. I know the kind of thing that's going on in this basin.
You know too much, retorted Mort, advancing on his wife with clenched fists.
For an instant, it looked as if the man were going to strike Becky.
Go ahead,
cried Becky shrilly.
Go ahead, knock me down and I'll see to it. There ain't no slip up the next time I try to put you and your pack of wolves where you belong.
Penny darted a quick look at the children. They were fascinated by the argument between their parents. She felt the embarrassment the others lacked the grace to feel. She was frightened for Rebecca, but Rebecca was a changed personality who now seemed formidable.
I thought the whole thing over, Mort Cavendish,
went on Rebecca, her dark eyes glowing with hatred and defiance.
I ain't nothing to gain by seeing the pack of you jailed. Don't matter to me if you and Bright and all the rest of you stay here or rot in jail.
Her bosom rose and fell quickly with the intensity of her outburst.
Or you can dangle at the end of a rope. I don't care none. I've watched a lot of you Cavendishes with your stuck-up, holier-than-thou ways. I'm sick of you, but I aim to stay here just the same. You keep out of this house and leave me and the children alone, and I'll keep my lips buttoned up as to what I know about you. Lay a hand on me again, and this time you won't have the chance to kill off them that comes for you.
Mort looked apoplectic as the rage made his face a deep scarlet. He trembled visibly with his effort to control himself.
That's my bargain, Mort. As long as I can be rid of you by keeping quiet with what I know, I'm satisfied to go on living here and doing the best I can to raise the youngins. Take it or leave it.
Mort abruptly turned and strode from the house, banging the door closed behind him.
Pack of skunks,
fumed Becky to no one in particular.
Makes me sick seeing the way they all think I ain't good enough for 'em. Well, every last one of them is a thieving killer, taking orders from Brian himself.
Becky,
said Penny.
You can say all you want about Mort and Vince, or even Wally and Jeb, but...
Say all I want about anyone,
snapped Becky with a fire she'd never shown before.
But when you call Uncle Brian a crook, you are mistaken,
continued the girl, ignoring the interruption.
I know Uncle Brian is stern. He's hard as a hickory knot, and he's unforgiving. He resents your being here, and he's been mighty mean to you. But he is not a crook.
If he ain't a crook, why does he let crooks hang out here? He ain't blind, is he? As for you, I don't want none of your sympathy, or help neither. Maybe I ain't got no fancy education or highfalutin' clothes, and my looks and figure ain't what they was 10 years ago, but I can hold my head high for anyone and not have to admit I got cousins and uncles that the law should have hung some time ago.
You don't know what you're talking about, Becky. Now calm down and get that meal ready for the kids.
I don't need you to tell me what to do,
cried the infuriated woman.
I've done plenty of thinking this morning, when you same as laughed at me for trying to warn you away from here. You wouldn't believe that this basin is a hell hole reeking from murder plans. All right, don't believe me. I know what I heard in the cottonwoods, and I heard a plenty. I was a fool to send word to Captain Blythe of the Texas Rangers. All it got me was a beating, and all those Texas Rangers done was to get themselves killed off. Instead of telling what I know, I'll keep it private and make that polecat husband of mine leave me alone to save his neck. I reckon he'll keep out of my sight now, all right. He knows I can fetch the law here any time I want.
glass from the window crashed in before the sound of the shot reached Penny's ears. She instinctively knew it was a .45 slug that tore through the window. Her startled half-cry of alarm and surprise choked in her throat as she saw Rebecca spin halfway around from the impact of the lead and stagger giddily for several seconds. Then Penny clutched her about the waist and tried to guide her to a chair. Becky's mouth dropped open. Her hand clutched her breast, and she stared unbelievingly at the red that seeped between her fingers.
"Easy now," said Penny. "Take it easy, Becky."
The slim girl found the woman surprisingly heavy to support. She was compelled to ease her to the floor. She was only vaguely aware of the cries that came from the older children, who raced from beyond the curtains.
It don't hurt much," faltered Becky. "I should have known better. Mort's the one. Maybe now you believe me."
Her voice was weak, so weak that Penny could barely understand what she was saying. Rebecca's body trembled convulsively. Her eyelids fluttered, then opened wide, and her dark eyes looked at Penny with a glaze over them.
"Now,"
she began slowly,
"now you believe this basin is a nest of killers."
The tired eyes closed. Penny lowered the woman's head and felt for a pulse she knew was gone. The children crowded around, wide-eyed and unbelieving. The oldest boy said,
"Now Ma won't have to be hurt by Pa no more."
At the brave look in the pinched small face, Penny choked up. She gathered the lad to her.
"No, Billy. Ma won't have any more pain of any kind. And don't you worry. I'm going to take care of you little fellas."
She would have said more, but another crash from outside interrupted. She raced for the window through which the previous bullet had come and saw a startling sight. Mort Cavendish was clawing at his throat and staggering like a drunken man, but only for an instant. Then his legs caved in as he crumpled to the ground. Penny ran from the house and splashed through the puddles on the ground to where Mort lay. Yuma, running from another direction, reached the fallen man at about the same time.
"Stand back," he said. "I'll tend to things."
He rolled Mort over. The wound in the neck just beneath the jawbone was still clasped by the hand of the unconscious man. Red moisture seeped between his fingers. Yuma drew a bandana from his pocket, then paused as he looked again at Penny.
"I told you to stand back. I gotta have a look at this wound."
"Go on, have a look,"
snapped the girl.
"Feel his pulse and see if he's still alive."
"He's living all right, but you vamoose. This won't be a pretty sight to see."
"What do you take me for, sissy? Pull his hand away. Let's see how badly he's hurt."
Yuma nodded, muttering beneath his breath. Penny noticed that the big cowboy was now fully composed and at ease. He seemed competent and direct in manner. His flustered embarrassment of the corral was gone. He examined the wound with a skill that showed familiarity with such things. Though it bled profusely, Yuma said,
"Just grazed him. I reckon he'll live without no trouble."
"If he lives, he'll hang. He just murdered Becky,"
said Penny flatly.
"And I hope he lives."
Yuma, holding the bandana against the wound, looked at the girl and spoke with an exasperating drawl.
"Maybe you ain't heard straight, Miss Penny, but I tried to tell you a little while ago they don't hang killers in this basin. What they do is hire 'em, and sleep 'em, and eat 'em, and keep 'em hid so the law can't get at 'em."
Penny chose to let the speech pass for the time being. There were other things that needed attention. Yuma looked at the wound and commented,
"Maybe I can put a tourniquet around his neck to stop the bleeding."
"A tourniquet would strangle him,"
advised Penelope. Yuma nodded.
"I know that."
Vince came running to investigate the shots, with Jeb ambling along behind.
"Who did it? Who shot him?"
demanded Vince in a loud voice. He elbowed Yuma to one side and bent to examine the wound.
"Better get him to the house. There's more room there than here in the shack."
Yuma nodded silently.
We'll go on,
snapped Vince.
Pick him up. Carry him to Bryant's house.
Penny watched the blonde Yuma lift Mort off the ground as if he were a baby. He tossed him over one shoulder as he might have done with a sack of flour and walked toward the house, followed by Vince. Penny turned abruptly and bumped into Jeb, who stood close behind her.
Oh, I'm sorry. I've got to get back to Becky's and take care of the kids.
Jeb nodded.
So what happened to Becky? He asked.
Mort killed her, but I don't know who shot Mort,
Jeb said.
Brian himself done it. He's standing on the porch with a rifle now, watching what goes on.
Penny looked and found this to be true.
His shooting Mort gives me cause for a heap more thinking,
went on the leanest of the Cavendish men.
I figured I had it all thought out, but this comes up and throws me off. Men with eyes that ain't no good can't shoot a rifle.
I've got to go to the poor children.
Wait, Penelope.
Jeb gripped the girl's arm and lowered his voice.
This is the start, he said mysteriously. But it ain't the finish. Bride is fixing to wear a shroud, too.
Chapter 9. Bryant Talks. The wounded man in the cave sat with his back propped against the rocky wall, fully conscious and aware of his surroundings. For the first time in nearly 48 hours, he was able to think clearly. Beside him, there was a health-giving broth and a sort of biscuit made by Tonto. The food was calculated to make rich blood and new strength in the shortest possible time. The Texan had slept fitfully during the day, sipping the broth and nibbling food each time he wakened. Now, feeling well rested, he tried to piece the events of the past 2 days together. Most of the time was vague to him. He remembered that it had been night when he'd crawled, wounded, to the ledge after seeing Silver desert him. Morning light revealed the cave into which he had crept with his tormented pain. Tonto must have found him then, though he could recollect nothing of the Indians bandaging his shoulder. Most of that day, yesterday, he'd slept. Then, at sunset, Tonto had returned with food and herbs to dress his injuries. He couldn't remember much of what happened after that, but there were faint recollections of the Indians' crude but nonetheless effective surgery, followed by applications of various sorts. Tonto had been with him all night, plying the skill of the Indian in combating illness. He remembered trying to ask Tonto what had become of Silver, but the Indian had said something about waiting till he was stronger before talking. Then Tonto had left and the wounded man had slept. Now at sunset, the Indian was due to return. The Texan examined the food near him and wondered where it came from. It wasn't wild turkey that might have been shot by Tonto. Neither was it game that might have been found in the woods. Tonto must have friends close by who supplied this food. A little while ago, the ranger had heard sounds that might have been shots, but they were very far away. He couldn't yet have implicit faith in all his senses. Now he heard what he thought might be hoofbeats, but again, he wasn't sure. He waited, and the sound came nearer. In a moment, there could be no doubt about the rhythmic tattoo on the rocks in the gap. Horses, two at least, came close and stopped. A moment later, Tonto entered the cave. The Indian looked gratified when he saw that color had returned to the face of the Texan. He examined the wounded shoulder critically and announced that the infection had gone down considerably, and that now there was no longer any doubt about the ranger's full recovery.
I left camp on the mountain, the Indian explained. I will go fetch Silver here.
Silver?
That's right. He'll be plenty safe here for time.
The Indian explained how huge rocks near the wall of the gap made a satisfactory hiding place for both the ranger's white stallion and his own paint horse.
Where was your camp, Tonto?
Tonto told about the clearing on the side of Thunder Mountain and the trail that led from the clearing downhill to the basin and uphill to the mountain's top. From the top of the mountain, it was possible, despite all rumors to the contrary, to ride in many directions.
Then the basin can be entered without going through the canyon.
Tonto nodded.
I've always been told that was impossible.
It is not impossible. You will see by the by. Get rest first. Get well. Then we ride.
The wounded man was eager to leave the cave and start upon a campaign of vengeance in behalf of his fallen comrades. But when he tried to rise, Tonto pressed him back to his seat.
Wait, he said. You are not ready yet.
The effort made the ranger quite aware that he was still weaker than he had supposed. While Tonto rebuilt a tiny smokeless fire of very dry bits of wood and prepared a new supply of hot food, he told how the day before he had ridden down the gap to the spot where the massacre had taken place, and then heard shooting far beyond. He had risked discovery by going as far as the entrance of the basin. From there he could see the activity around the house. He saw Mort's body carried to the ranch house, and a little later saw the girl, Penelope, take the children to the same rambling structure. Then the body of Rebecca had been taken there. He told all of this in his jerky, stilted manner while he put things on the fire to cook, and then redressed the ranger's wounds.
You will need plenty more rest, Tonto told the convalescent man. We will talk more by the by.
But Tonto, tell me more about what you've seen. Did you find or see anything of my guns and the cartridge belt?
We will talk more after you are strong.
Do you have any idea who ambushed us?
I've got plenty thought on that, the Indian said. But we will talk by the by.
It was you who called Silver away from me. I remember your nightbird's call. Why'd you do that? Tonto refused to give the Texan any satisfaction. He explained that he had several things that needed doing outside the cave, and that he was in something of a hurry to get away. He further impressed upon the wounded man the importance of rest, then more rest, to give the healing, broken flesh a chance to mend beyond the danger of tearing open anew. The freshly made broth was steaming hot and tasted good. When he finished drinking it, the ranger felt drowsiness creeping over him again, despite all of his recent sleep. The effort of even so short a talk with Tonto seemed to have tired him. He felt strangely secure now that his Indian friend was with him. The sleep he needed now was natural sleep, without the nightmares of the pain and fever. Tonto watched the white man for some time and marked the regularity with which the sleeping man's chest rose and fell. A trace of a smile showed on the thin lips.
You rest plenty,
the Indian murmured.
You will need plenty of rest for the things to come.
Perhaps Tonto knew that he was being prophetic. He remained in the cave till after darkness had fallen. Then Tonto proceeded on a grim mission, taking with him a spade. Tonto knew from a previous study of the ground near the scene of the massacre that no one from the basin had ridden past the dead men lying there. Now in the darkness, he continued through the gap until he reached the point where it opened into Bryant's basin. He waited there, watching the distant buildings for signs of activity. He wanted to make sure his work of the night could be followed through without interruption. He saw the ranch house brilliantly lit, and nearby the long row of lighted windows that marked the bunkhouse. The dead men weren't far from the entrance of the gap. It was less than a quarter of an hour's walk on foot, less than if a man were mounted. Tonto knew his plans would occupy most of the night, and he must not be found at work. He gathered huge armfuls of dry stalks and dead shrubbery and spread them over the earth. Anyone entering the gap would certainly snap a warning that would be heard by Tonto. Then the Indian, shouldering his spade, turned his back on Bryant's basin and the lit house and went to the dead men. Inside the ranch house, Penelope sank exhausted into a chair before the fireplace. Her uncle, sullen and morose, looked up at the girl.
"Get the kids to bed?"
he asked. Penny nodded.
"We've got to find somebody to take care of them, Uncle Bryant. Some older woman who can come here."
"I already arranged for that."
"You have?"
"Wally spends most of his time in town, so I figured he'd know more about things there. I told him to hire a woman that'll come here and raise the youngsters."
"Wally?"
Penny couldn't conceal the contempt in her voice.
"I know he's not good for much, damn overdressed lout, but he knows everybody in town from his time catting around. He said he could find somebody to take care of the kids.
Penny stretched her legs toward the fire and slouched back in the chair. The day had been a most strenuous one, beginning with the surprising visit of Rebecca to her room. Then there had been the ride up Thunder Mountain, the meeting with Tonto, and the subsequent return with food for the Indian's friend. These incidents had been made to seem distant, despite the hours, by the shooting of Rebecca and Mort, and the endless details that had to be attended to because of them. With Jeb bandaging Mort's wound while Vince barked instructions, there had been countless last rites that had to be performed for Becky. The dead woman reposed in one of the big house's bedrooms, where she would be until burial. Penny watched the dancing flames for several minutes. There were so many things she wanted to discuss that she hardly knew where to begin. Bryant was a hard man, at best, to talk to. The wrong thing spoken, he'd go into one of his tantrums or retire to a shell of stubborn silence that would tell her nothing.
"Jeb said you were the one who shot Mort,"
the girl began. Bryant nodded.
"I sensed things boiling up between him and Rebecca for a long time. I didn't figure he'd go as far as killing his wife, or I'd have done something before now. I heard the shot he fired and hope he'd gone wild. That's why I shot to wound him."
"Then you didn't intend to kill him?"
"Course not,"
Bryant snapped quickly.
"Shot to wing him, just like I done. You savvy that? I hit right where I done aimed."
The old man leaned forward in his chair as he spoke, making a very definite point of what he said. Penelope nodded.
"But now that Mort is going to recover, he'll of course be punished for murder, won't he?"
Bryant's eyes stared hard at the girl.
"Who told you," he barked, "to ask that?"
Penny was surprised at his intensity. She stammered,
"Nobody asked me to."
"You sure of that?"
"Of course."
"You sure it wasn't that cowhand called Yuma that put you up to finding out what my intentions was regarding Mort?"
"I haven't talked with Yuma since he carried Mort here to the house."
Bryant leaned back, eyes squinting toward the fire, lips pursed in thought. Penny tried to study her uncle's eyes. Was it true they were failing? If so, how could he have fired with such amazing accuracy? She remembered what Jeb had said just after the shooting. "Men with eyes that ain't no good can't shoot a rifle." Bryant Cavendish was grumbling in an undertone.
"Run this place all my life. Built her up from nothing to one of the best ranches in Texas. Now I can't turn without being told how to run my own affairs by every saddle tramp that drifts in here for work."
"Why did you mention Yuma?"
asked Penny.
"I had a row with that upstart this afternoon."
"Oh."
Penny lifted her eyebrows questioningly.
"You did?"
"As if I didn't know what's going on my own property. Well, that pipsqueak from Arizona tried to tell me I was hiring outlaws. I told him to mind his own damn business, and when I wanted advice from him, I'd ask him for it."
Penny calculated that the argument must have been previous to her talk with Yuma, because Bryant and the blonde cowhand had no chance to talk after the shooting, which came almost immediately following her discussion at the corral. This, then, could not have been the cause of the strange change in Yuma's manner. Yuma had been almost antagonistic when she had met him beside Mort's fallen body.
"But Uncle Bryant,"
said Penny seriously,
"are you sure you haven't any outlaws working here? You might not know them, you see, and Yuma having been outside the basin until just recently."
"That'll do,"
snapped the old man.
"I'll run this ranch without your help, thank you very much."
"Uncle Bryant, don't bite my head off. I'm just curious. What are you going to do about Mort?"
"I aim to think the situation over, speak to him when he can talk,
and make up my mind. You can tell that Yuma critter that, if you're a minder. I know what he thinks. He thinks I'm running a regular outlaw hideout here and thinks I'm going to let Mort get away with murdering his wife. He'll be waiting to see what I do. Well, he can just wait.
The subject was on thin ice. Penny knew it would take but little to throw her uncle into a violent rage, but there were things she had to have him answer. In her very best manner, she leaned close to the old man.
"Uncle Bryant,"
she said softly,
"are you sure you can trust Vince and Mort with the authority that you give them?"
"No," was the surprising reply. "I know damn well I can't trust them, but I gotta. Can't get around myself, and I won't hire bosses from outside to boss my own flesh and blood. I gotta let those worthless louts run things."
"What I mean is,"
said Penny. Then she stopped. She was at a loss to know just how to put the question that was foremost in her mind. She felt instinctively that Bryant was honest. She'd known her uncle many years, and had yet to find him engaged in anything that was otherwise. She stared into the fire for some time. Stern, bitter, unbending as the old man was, he had been fair to Penny. Bryant himself was the first to speak. He seemed to be voicing mental ills that had troubled him for some time.
"What choice have I got? I know them four nephews ain't worth a damn. If I could, I'd swap the four of them for a jackass."
He turned to face Penny.
"Vince has a nature. That poison a rattler that was fool enough to bite him. Wally ain't worth thinking about. Does nothing but spend all his time on clothes that scares the horse he's riding. Goes around with his hair all mutton tallowed down and a face that's as pasty as a fish's belly. Jeb ain't worth the powder to blow him to hell. Ain't got the energy even to keep his face washed. Then take..."
Bryant spat into the fire.
"Take Mort."
At the mention of the last name, the old man's disgust started at the corners of his mouth and finished by drawing the whole mouth out of shape.
"Well, he's finished with murdering his wife. I hated it when he brought a wife here, Penny. It wasn't that I disliked Rebecca. I never got to know her. It would have been the same with any wife Mort brought here. I know what a worthless pack of men they are, and it was seeing the Cavendish line propagated that riled me."
Penny had never heard her uncle speak in this way. It almost seemed as if he were burying the secrets of his soul.
"Now Becky is dead,"
he said with resignation.
"We'll see that she gets a proper burial, and we'll take care of the kids. There ain't nothing more to do."
Bryant pushed himself from his chair and caught hold of the mantle over the fireplace. He leaned partly against it while he fumbled for his pipe and tobacco. While he filled the pipe and tamped the fragrant weed down with a thumb, the old man went on speaking.
"I know what folks think about me, Penny, 'cause I fought hard and got rich and minded my own business. They're all quick to call me all kinds of a crook."
Bryant lit the pipe and sank back in his chair. His stern manner relaxed, and for a moment he looked like a very tired old man whose troubles were almost too heavy to bear.
"I know the sort your cousins are. God knows I ain't got where I am by not knowing how to judge men as well as hosses. They're a pack of hungry buzzards, just waiting for me to die so's they can cut this property up among them. They thought for a second I was hard of hearing or seeing or anything else. They'd pounce on that as an advantage to them."
Bryant's face lit for a moment.
"I guess shooting Mort like I'd done showed him I can still shoot straight when I've a mind to."
Penny couldn't ask then if Bryant's eyes were failing. He'd deny it, no matter what the truth. Bryant blew smoke toward the ceiling.
"Only one thing I'm hoping. I've got to see you taken care of."
A rap at the door broke off the conversation. Lonigan, a new man at the ranch, was there.
He was much more suave than any of the other employees and seemed something more than just a cowboy, though he lived in the bunkhouse with the others.
"I've been waiting for you, Lonergan," said Bryant.
"I'm ready."
Cavendish rose and muttered a word of good night to Penny. Lonergan followed the old man upstairs to the second floor, and a moment later Penelope heard the door of a bedroom close. She went outside hoping the cool breeze of night would blow some of the confusion from her mind. Someone came toward the porch from the direction of the bunkhouse with a rolling gait. It was Yuma. He doffed his hat when he saw Penny on the porch and said,
"I was sure hoping you'd be about, Miss Penny."
"I hear that you and Uncle Bryant had some words, Yuma."
The moonlight showed the serious look on Yuma's face. He nodded.
"That's sort of why I come here. I wanted to speak with you, ma'am.
Will you sit down?"
"Thanks, but I can sort of talk better standing up. I don't know just how to get into what I want to say, but after I shot Mort..."
"You?"
"Huh?" said Yuma in surprise.
"Did you say you shot Mort?"
demanded Penny.
"Sure. I would have drilled him clean if I hadn't been thrown off by your uncle's shooting. That's why I come here."
"My uncle shot? Then there were two shots?"
"We both fired together, Brian and me. His rifle bullet just missed me. It drilled my hat. Here, you can see."
Yuma stuck his finger through a neat hole in the hat.
"I was fool enough to let Bryant know I knowed the crooks that was working here. He tried to kill me so as I couldn't tell no one."
"Yuma, that's just not true. Uncle Bryant fired at Mort. He thought he hit Mort. He told me so."
Yuma nodded.
"That's what his story'll be. Only, it don't go down with me. I come to ask you, Miss Penny, if there ain't some place you can go instead of here."
"But I don't want to go anywhere else. Furthermore, I don't believe what you just said about my uncle."
"You won't leave, huh?"
"Of course not. This is my home."
"It would be downright unsafe here if something happened to Bryant, wouldn't it, ma'am?"
Penny drew herself up stiffly.
"Don't you,"
she demanded,
"have a lot to say for just a cowhand?"
"Maybe so,"
muttered the cowboy.
"I'm right sorry."
With that, he turned and walked away. Penny sat down on the steps, more bewildered than ever. She felt weak and helpless against the strange confusion of ideas and intrigue, suspicions and apprehensions in the basin. She stared across the level ground and saw the mouth of Bryant's Gap, brilliantly lit by the moon.